Hi, everyone. This is Tony Cappicelli on Christian Sponsor Billboard. Today, I want to introduce a very special friend of WNAH Radio, attorney Mary Clement, someone I've known for many, many years here in Nashville. She has offices in Gallatin and in Portland, and she's one of the best attorneys you can ever find. Mary's got a very special guest today, and she wants 30 minutes to tell you what's going on. Mary, how was that for an introduction, and welcome to the show.
Oh, Tony, it's always great to work with you. I'm so grateful you're letting me be on your show today, because one of the reasons I'm a criminal defense attorney is that I worked in Virginia Commonwealth University as a criminal justice professor. And I had students who were working in law enforcement and federal and state agencies telling me during the 80s and 90s about what was going on in the government and how corrupt it was and what was happening. And I didn't really, you know, I couldn't do anything with that information. And I just sat and watched and waited to see how it all played out. Well, one of my former students has done a marvelous, marvelous job of picking up on some of these things. He came by it accidentally, so to speak, because the book is called Unnatural Interference, and the research is just terrific. And he starts out each chapter, he said, this chapter is written by the son of a serial killer. Eric Penn, who's the author, is trying to figure out why human beings behave violently in recreational ways. So what he does is, in order to find out why his dad and uncle went on a killing spree in Richmond, Virginia in the 1960s, he uncovered a lot of other things that were happening to them. And in fact, his story is unique because he traces Nazi medical practice to medical procedures used on his family in the early 1960s. And what's important about that is that that's a forerunner. They were practicing on that family of what's going on today. Hence, the subtitle is called A Brief History of Mind Control. In the book, he walks along a timeline to help us see how unnatural interference engineered neurosis, psychosis in his family. He reached the conclusion that his father and 19-year-old uncle were not natural-born killers, but they were designed. When family members went to social agencies for help with their out-of-control children, they were given medications like LSD-25 and pills created by Nazi scientists during World War II and now by post-Nazi operatives working in cahoots with the CIA. So this is not a book trying to discredit our government, but it's a book to try and understand why his father and uncle did what they did. And, of course, he went through the rabbit hole and found out more and more. Eric, welcome. Glad to have you here. Tell us and introduce yourself a little bit and tell us about this LSD-25.
Okay, first of all, I'd like to say thank you to the audience of Tennessee and the radio station and Dr. Clement and everyone who is involved in putting this program on, as well as the advertisers and whoever else that's involved with making sure that the truth gets to the masses. And again, my name is Eric Penn. I'm the son of William Penn and the nephew of Thomas Lee Penn. And both of them were African-Americans who were accused of a series of murders. And so in the 1960s, as a matter of fact, the spring of 1966, it was unheard of because the people that they killed were black, white, young, old, male, and female. And that was like not a common thing that took place in the 60s, especially among African Americans. You know, they definitely would not have killed a Caucasian, because back during that time, you know, it was real easy to get the ultimate sanction, which is the electric chair. However, as a child, I was 2 years old at the time, so I don't have any recall of any of those incidents. But the police did bust in our house and knock down walls looking for weapons, but I have no recall of that. Anyhow, I've always had this strong desire to know who my father was. It just was a biological instinct that I wanted to know who my father was and where was he. So I started asking questions at a investigation as to trying to figure out what happened to my uncle and my father, because I knew it just wasn't normal. Humans don't act like that. And so I kept looking and looking and looking, and what I discovered was that the National Institute of Health, the United States Public Health Service, the Office of Strategic Services, which turned into the CIA Central Intelligence Agency, as well as the Office of Naval Research, organizations that's within our government, and that they were doing things that were unethical, and they knew it. They were very much aware of it. And so it was just shocking to see that they were using LS-25, which is D-lysergic acid, which was discovered by Albert Hofmann around the 1930s. So by 1947, these drugs, these mind-altering drugs, became a national security priority. And that was amazing to me when I found out that the United States government, after passing the Harrison Act of 1929, and other types of acts that gave the government permission to do research on mental health patients, as well as prisoners, as well as children who were considered, at that time they used the appellation retardation, but now that's considered a degrading word. So children who had challenges, our government allowed special interest groups in the scientific community to do research on these people by giving them LSD, psilocybin, mescaline, and all other types of drugs, which affects the hormonal discharge of the brain, which interferes with homeostatic stability or homeostasis. And so what happens is this LSD-25, I want the audience to also know that this is public information. All you have to do is go to your local library, your state library, and it's all in the archival system. This is nothing that is esoteric. The information.
Yeah, but you didn't know to go and look for it until after you discovered it with your family.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. I had an interest. I wanted to know not just what was happening to my family. I started noticing that many members in the community were acting with the same type of behavior that my father was and uncle was exhibiting in the 60s.
So what's happening today, people are surprised about what's happening with male violence, but you aren't, are you?
No, I'm not surprised at all, because, see, John B. Calhoun at Johns Hopkins University, he did some research on rats, and it was called a rat utopia. And they discovered that if you gave rats everything that they needed, quote-unquote welfare, and you gave them housing, and you gave them everything that they needed, what would happen, they would overpopulate, and then they would overstimulate themselves, and then they would commit violence against each other. The entire rat colony that Dr. John B. Calhoun used, they committed homicidal activity against each other. All the rats killed each other.
Wow.
They were living in an artificial contraption, and it was called, the term was called behavioral sink.
So what you were seeing was a pattern that started in the 60s, isn't, they were like trial runs to what's going on today.
It is my belief that Wim Penn and Thomas Lee Penn are identified for the first time in history as the Manchurian candidate. I believe that the book In Search of a Manchurian Candidate, the title of his book by John Marx, he was looking for the Manchurian candidate. Now, let me tell you why they use the term Manchuria. Because in Japan, the Japanese was doing unethical human research on prisoners of war in the part of China called Manchuria.
Right.
And so when all of that information... The general who was in charge of the Japanese army, the United States government gave him they exonerated him, wouldn't charge him with anything in return for him giving all of their literature on bacteria, vaccines, and funguses, and yeast, and all that to the United States. So in practice, he gave them the whole biological warfare data that he had gathered during World War II. All of that came over here to America.
Yeah, explain how that came over.
Well, General Reinhard Gehlen, he was a Nazi, and he didn't want to go to he didn't want to be tried at the Nuremberg trials, so he started putting all the incriminating information on microfilm, and he hid it in the Alps. And when he hid the information in the Alps, at the end of the war, he negotiated with the Office of Strategic Service at that time, and they said that well, if you give us all of the microfilm, we will allow you to be a part of the American government. And they recruited him into the CIA. Even though they knew he was a Nazi, he showed them how to set up an impenetrable organization that could rule the world.
And that's what happened.
And all of this had something to do with aggression. After World War II, the United States government took a special interest in aggression. Because we all saw for the first time on television the historical collection of atrocities that took place on the battlefields as well as at Buchenwald and Dachau and other concentration camps. And we saw this live for the first time on television, and humans was very disturbed by that. A lot of people came back from the war suffering from neurotic fatigue, which is combat fatigue. And so they had to study aggression as well as warfare, to try to figure out how the human brain works.
So, these Nazi scientists were adopted into the medical profession here in the States, and wasn't... So, talk about these pharmaceuticals that they gave them. We call them medications, but in fact, they're chemicals that are not natural to the human body, and they cause havoc because they, you talk about it.
Okay.
Your chapter one, Chemicals and the Primitive Instincts in a Modern World.
Okay, so when you go back through evolution, you go back through the prehistoric times, you can imagine how a human must have felt when the sun was going down, knowing that all the animals was going to come out, knowing that all of their enemies were going to come out. You know, it was probably extremely frightening because they didn't have electricity, they didn't have anything but their instincts. And so it was very violent. You know, humans had to operate almost like wild animals trying to survive.
Right.
Prehistoric times. So, but all of that information is encoded in our genetics. Epigenetics is called atavistic types of things that's recorded in our genes and in our biosystem. All of those things are inside of every human being, but they're dormant because why? Because we now have electricity, we have houses, we have shelter, we have warmth, blankets, and all of this type of stuff that we have that can make us feel comfortable and allow us to have a good night's sleep.
Right.
Well, in prehistoric times, people were walking around psychotic, afraid, anxious, terrified. And so what happens, the medications that they give, which is alkaloids or poisons, is based on dosage and things of that nature. Too much of it can have tremendous side effects. And one of the side effects is called akathisia. It's almost like tardive dyskinesia. And what happens, the body feels like it's jumping out of its own skin. And the body feels like the brain is just seeping out of the ears. It's just like weird. It's like a weird feeling that these people have. And me and you, we may call it withdrawals. But
right.
What's actually happening is that the body is squeezing out of itself. And so this year, suicide rate is higher than the homicide rate. Because all these people are coming down off Oxycontin and all these other mind-altering drugs that's causing them to not feel so great about life.
Right.
And so,
what's interesting about those drugs is that some of them are prescribed and people get addicted to them, but there's a lot of them that are on the streets. and the street, and the CIA is the one who helps put them out on the streets. What I learned about the CIA was that during John F. Kennedy's time, they wanted us to have Cuba, because the CIA had to go through Congress to get its operating funds. And so they wanted to get more money and couldn't tell the American public what all they were into because they were rogue. They wanted Cuba because of the casino there, so that they would have the operating money from the casino. Well, in reality, John F. Kennedy didn't go in on the Bay of Pigs, left them stranded, and Cuba, of course, we know what happened to it. It kept the casino. So the CIA was not only mad at John F. Kennedy, but they had to find other ways to get the drugs in and out of our country. And they did that through the Vietnam War, when they gave free drugs to the servicemen, with the idea being that the people fighting in Vietnam, when they came back to the United States, they would be ready people for the demand in drugs. And that's still going on today, isn't it?
Absolutely. In order to control people, you have to control their food and you have to control their drugs. So you have the Food and Drug Administration. You have the Center for Disease Control. It doesn't say the Center for Disease Eradication. It says the Center for Disease Control. And one of the things that's alarming for me is that during my research, I kept seeing the National Institute of Health. I kept seeing the national, all of these same agencies that's in charge of the vaccines. The same people, Johnson & Johnson, Merck, these same people, if you go back and study these same organizations, corporations rather, if you go back to them, they all did research on prisoners. The Johnson & Johnson, the research they did was at Holmesburg Prison, and the name of that book is called Acres of Skin. And they did all this research on especially black prisoners with cosmetics, drugs, pharmaceuticals. And remember, pharmaceutical comes from the word witchcraft. The etymology of the word pharmaceutical is witchcraft. So you're looking at people that's practicing magic. It's a form of magic. Chemical comes from the word alchemy. And so alchemy is the chemicals that make up the universe. So, you know, you're talking about the manipulation of these chemicals, and they're going into the human bodies. Now, look, my uncle and my father, they did most of their time going back and forth to the hospitals being researched on. So even though they were doing a lot of time in prison for the six murders, by the way, they were found guilty, and they one got four life sentences and the other one got 40 years. My uncle did 21 years and was murdered in prison. And then my father got out, and he stayed out for 21 years.
Now, why was your father able to stay 21 years? Because they couldn't pull him in and give him more drugs?
Well, I call it the placebo effect. And where one person, you give the drug, and they go absolutely crazy. And the other person, you don't get a drug, but they do a thing called shared psychosis. Both of them be crazy. But then the one that is on the placebo, you can kind of work them off and do a thing called neuroplasticity and put them in a lot of programs, and then they can be let back on the street. But the one that was given the actual drug continued to be violent the entire time he was in prison and was murdered on the 21st year. And now at the same time, the same year, they let my father out. Now, both of them went in at the same time. So when you're talking about doing research, you know, they let one person out, let the other one died in there. And so it's still a part of the research agenda.
Right. Thomas was one of the boys that was in a research project at a very early age with Dr. Heather Rees, who was a psychologist from Nazi Germany, and her husband. Talk about how early and what drugs they put Thomas on that you found out about.
Okay, the entire family came under the observation of the government, because my grandfather was at Pearl Harbor when they were attacked, December 7th, 1941, I believe, and my grandfather was there. So when he came back home by 1951, when my grandmother and my grandfather separated, so So right. My uncle, remember, he was around 4 years old at the time. He was born the same year that the CIA was established, 1947. So by the age of 15, when he was going through puberty, they put him in Central State Hospital in Petersburg, Virginia. He stayed there for approximately 9 months to 2 years. It's questionable how exactly how long he stayed there. But he started being researched on at the age that I know of, what I was able to discover through my research, at the age of 15.
Right, but what's interesting about that research is that even though he went to a mental hospital, he wasn't given any therapy. He was just given drugs.
He was sedated almost the entire time, and through my research, I found out that Dr. Ewan Cameron up in Montreal in Canada at a place called Allen Memorial Institute, he would do the same thing to his patients, and they have a movie out about it called Sleep Room. And Dr. Ewan Cameron, he got caught being financed by the Central Intelligence Agency. He got caught. They actually had litigation up in Canada, and the families that were experimented on actually got money.
Well, what's interesting about Thomas was he was known to these agencies even before he committed the crimes. In fact, you have data in here from people giving testimony in 1962 when the killings occurred in 1966.
Isn't that surprising? I thought that was very unique that they were keeping such an extensive record on the entire Penn family, but especially on Thomas. There was a special prison made in Virginia called Mecklenburg Correction Center. You can go on the internet and you can find, but they made that prison especially for Thomas. That prison was made for Thomas Lee Penn. He ended up suing the state because he knew that they were going to kill him there. And so he sued, and it's on the internet. Anybody can go on the internet and find Thomas Lee Penn versus the State Penitentiary of Virginia. And you'll see in there where the psychologist was following him around. He kept asking the interviewee at the hearing that he had, the institutional classification hearing, he kept saying, "Who is that psychiatrist? Why, this psychologist is taking all these notes. Why don't you give me this person's name?" They refused to give the name because it was probably, and I'm only speculating on this one, it was probably a CIA operative.
Right.
So right. They never gave the name.
Well, what I think is interesting is even though your father and uncle killed six people, there's no motive. They were different. They were all different people. There are men, one woman. But what was really interesting to me is that when the police took Thomas's statements, confession, in the transcript, it says that they asked him they were trying to figure out what his motive was. And so they asked him, "Did you take anything off of this man's body?" And Thomas says, "Yeah, I took his wallet and I took his watch." And they then said, "What did you, thinking, I know how police work. The police were thinking, well, great, now we've got him for another charge called robbery. And then he said, "I burnt the identification and I smashed the watch." And they looked at him and said, "Well, why did you smash the watch?" And he said, "Because I already had one." Now, that tells me this guy wasn't all there. His elevator didn't go all the way up to the top, as they would say. He's a little off his rocker. So you even talked about one time where he saw the white light before he killed the guy, which is attributed to LSD.
Yes, and that's exactly where I was getting ready to go when I heard you speaking just now. And when a person takes LSD, remember, he was being abused with it. It was not like a recreational drug, and it was not something that he consented to. He didn't know what was happening to his mind, so when he started seeing all these lights, he thought that, that there was something biologically wrong with him. So when they asked him, why did you kill the people, he said, "Once I done it, I knew something was wrong." He did not know why he killed those people. He still don't know why. He's dead now, but I used to talk to him. He never knew why he did it. He kept saying that this light would go off, he would hear this voice, and that was it. But those are called flashbacks.
isn't that what Sarin, the person who was accused of killing Robert Kennedy? And we've had several other people who say, oh, even Hinckley, you know, I don't remember anything.
Yes, because remember, the brain is an internal organism that functions by outside stimuli received through the optic nerve all the way down to the amygdala, the limbic system, which requires our motor skills, tells us how to move, how to respond to the environment. His hormonal system had been driven mad. It was dripping with total confusion. That's the same thing that is happening to the young people today. They're taking this cough syrup called Lean, and it's causing them to have seizures. And now the homicide rate is going sky high because these young people are going through the same thing that Thomas went through. The only difference is they're on the streets. Thomas was inside of an institution. These very sophisticated headphones, what type of electrical impulse is that sending to the temporal lobe area of the brain?
Right. And what I think is interesting about the youth today, as you said, they're overstimulated with electronic gadgets and video games and telephones, as well as these drugs.
And of course,
I think what the real problem is that these chemicals are in our diets. They're in our water supply. They're in our oxygen with plastic and petroleum. What I think is interesting is you point out that around public housing, what kind of stores do they have there? You pointed out they were convenience stores and they were beverage stores called liquor stores. Explain why.
Because it's a strategic way of creating sickness in specific concentrated communities. It's just a shame. It's nothing but sugar. It's nothing but artificial flavors. It's nothing but malt liquor, menthol cigarettes, and the health disparities is just going to waste. And most of these people don't even have health insurance or none of those types of programs that could help them if they did get sick.
Well, they don't have fresh fruits and vegetables that aren't. I mean, I've never seen a grocery store near public housing. Eric, we have got to end this, and we're going to have to get you back to talk some more. But for right now, can you give us an email or a phone number or something so we can reach you, please?
Yes, 6137B as in boy, M as in man, at gmail.com. And the people could inquire about the book, Unnatural Interference, A Brief History of Mind Control by Eric Penn, that was just published in the month of August. So it's fresh off the press.
Yes, I know it's fresh off the press, and folks, you can't get it on Amazon yet because it's not there. You have to get it through the author. 6137, B as in boy, M as in Mary, @gmail.com. And I am Mary Clement, attorney, and my phone number is 615-559-5272, and you can get me at MaryClement@Reagan, Reagan.com. MaryClement@Reagan, Reagan.com. His book is fascinating for those of you who have had any understanding. What it did for me is it filled in the pieces for me, and I can now see the plot that was begun decades ago to help enslave us and make us less than the human beings God intended us to be. Thank you very much. I appreciate you, and we'll talk to you later. Thank you, and God bless.
Day.
All right, thank you very much. Bye-bye.